Welcome to RFN, episode 358. I am your host, James Jones. Dr. Metz was supposed to be joining us, but we found out literally just before the first time I recorded this introduction that he wasn't going to be here, at least for now, due to an internet outage at his apartment. Mr. Lindemann is also not going to be joining us this week. He is taking a temporary and hopefully short leave of absence. So with us this week, we have, as always, our editor, Mr. Guillaume Veillette.
I'm getting deja vu here.
I'm making this a much faster introduction this time. and our esteemed guest, Mr. Carl Castaneda.
There's no esteem involved here. Let's be honest.
It's good enough. I mean, I gotta sell it. I gotta sell what I can sell.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm doing this all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So, first off this week, we're gonna go right into new business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about this week's, biggest Nintendo release, their eShop-only Wii Sports Club.
What's old is new again.
Well, not... No, no, no.
Still kind of old.
You mean this segment or that particular game?
Hey, take your pick, man.
So, if you've been living, not listening to this podcast, we've talked about this game a few times, Wii Sports Club is the eShop-exclusive sort of reimagining of Wii Sports with the Wii Sports Resort control scheme. And a cell phone pay-to-play content model, where you
not really, though. You can buy, definitely, the games for $10.
You can buy the games individually.
Yeah.
Or you can pay to play them for segments of time. So it's right now it's just tennis and bowling, but afterwards, what's the full list?
Yeah, it's going to be like baseball and boxing and I'm blanking out here.
Yeah, the Wii Sports games.
Yeah.
Yep. If you buy boxing, by the way.
Golfing, of course.
Golf. So right now when you download the game, you get a 24-hour demo where you can play the game for free unlimited. So right now I've been playing some tennis and some bowling. Wii Sports Club. God damn, there's a lot of Wii Sports games. Wii Sports Club Tennis feels a lot like what you'd imagine a Wii Sports Resort version of the original Wii Sports Tennis would feel like. Mm-hmm. That is a hard sentence to diagram. But if you imagine the original Wii Sports Tennis game with Wii Motion Plus, that's what you get.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some wonkiness with control where moving into a backhand would cause my player to swing before I had a chance to really swing, costing me a shot.
Sure.
I used to be pretty good at Wii Sports Tennis. I'm struggling with the control scheme. I'm kind of starting to get a handle on it, but it is also possible that my controller wasn't calibrated. I did notice that at the start of the game, they don't ask you to calibrate your controller every time, which is different from how they used to handle the Wii Motion Plus.
Yeah.
Right.
So I calibrated it later, but I didn't have a chance to come back around because I moved into what I played the most, the original Wii Sports, bowling.
Bowling is great.
So Wii Sports Resort Bowling is basically on display here. You have Wii Motion Plus control that gives you a lot better control over how much spin you put on the ball. It's also a bit more sensitive. It's the only game where you should probably wear the strap.
Yeah.
Just as a fair warning, if you've forgotten the strap is a thing that exists, this was the one that broke a lot of TVs, so you should probably consider it. How the game, you know, the game plays pretty much the same. You've got sort of a spin control mode, which was in Resort. You've got, which is basically you're trying to get it through gates. You've got the 100-pin mode, which sounds like 10 pins. You have 100, and you have regular 10-pin bowling.
Mm-hmm.
The big addition to Wii Sports Club is the clubs and the online play. So a club is a regional area, you could do worldwide if you want, that is essentially you're competing against people in the club every 24 hours for dominance. And when you play, you can actually see how you chart against other members of the club.
So it's basically different demarcations of leaderboards, basically.
Yeah, it's regional leaderboards. I mean, you could do worldwide if you want to.
Sure.
I'm in the Virginia club, which 12 hours after the game came out is remarkably Spartan. So as you're playing, you'll get these little pop-ins from the Miiverse from people in your club. And right now, since there apparently are only four people in that club, I'm getting a lot of the same Miiverse posts, sometimes getting the same Miiverse post at the same time on two places on my screen.
Hmm.
It's a little disconcerting.
Now, James, I have a question for you. I largely credit the original Wii Bowling as fooling me into thinking that I was a good bowler.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, do you know, with the Wii Motion Plus, do you think the sensitivity is a little bit better? Do you think it's a little more accurate?
I think you can do more. I think it's, in the original game, if you just sort of lined it up and then diagonaled it a bit and then just do it through the shit out of it really hard.
Oh, yeah.
You get a strike. I think it's harder to get a strike.
Mm-hmm.
I think you probably feel like you have more control. So it took me a couple games to master spin and understand how my personal throw affects the spin of the ball.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten to a point where I can consistently get strikes on, you know, a third of my throws.
Yeah.
Which is not nearly what the bowling dominance I was able to exert over the original Wii Sports Resort.
Sure, yeah.
And is it close to your actual performance on a bowling in a bowling
alley?
I mean,
it's gentle. I mean, I'm anywhere between a 100 and 115, 120 bowler.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I was when I was still playing. I was clocking about 150s, 160s in this game. So,
right.
Yeah.
But when you're playing Wii Bowling, though, you're easily in like 200 ball.
Oh, yeah. You're in the 200 space. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Milo's Astro Lane shit going on where you're just like, I've got 18 perfect games in a row. What?
Exactly. Yeah.
So the other addition, though, is the online mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I only had a chance to do one game of online bowling. I had my choice between tennis and bowling. And given that my, much like in Wii Sports where you leveled up as you got things, considering I got negative 15 experience points for my tennis match against the AI, I figured, let's go with bowling. So I played a game of bowling with somebody in my club. It was very quickly connected. And while I was waiting for him to connect, it told me it found him, I was waiting for us to connect. And while it was waiting, I was able to do some practice throws. Mm-hmm. So that felt good. So he got in there. I wasn't waiting around for him. Got in there. It was very briskly paced. Communication's a little funky, so as one would expect, you can't just go hog wild and say whatever you want. There's a bunch of pre-chosen phrases you can do under categories for, like, congratulations,
sure.
Like, terrible mistakes, you know, taunting. The tauntings are mild, but they're the most extreme one is, I thought you were trying to throw at the pins. But, you know, it's stuff like that. So there was a lot of me and him going, nice, 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 nice. Nice, nice.
But see, if I were playing this with you, James, I would just assume every single comment was passive aggressive.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't know who I am. So that's fine. You can also apparently use what is you map comments to the D-pad, the top, the left, right, up.
Sure.
But apparently, you can also use your Miiverse stuff. There's a Miiverse button for when you're mapping.
Mm.
I didn't drill into it because based on what I've seen, there's only 5 Miiverse posts in my club total.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll try that later some other time.
Sure.
But, you know, it was surprisingly brisk. You know, I would throw, and then within a couple seconds, he was throwing. And, you know, I thought maybe they were just hiding the lag in bowling. You know, you could probably get away with hiding it a little bit.
Oh, sure,
but
yeah.
He was reacting to the throws pretty much as soon as my ball hit the pins.
Oh, nice.
So I got a strike, and I got a nice pretty much right away. So assuming he wasn't really just an AI, and he actually existed as a person, It was quick. It was responsive. I didn't do a lot of waiting around, except for the fact he apparently got confused by the fact you can roll up to 3 times in frame 10.
Sure.
I just stood there for a little while. I'm like, oh, boy.
That this is free and that the network was probably getting fairly hammered, and the fact they were able to stand up with it pretty well
is
a good sign.
Yeah, it was a good feeling. Neat little thing I noticed, because Nintendo does put these little touches into their game, is behind the bowling alley, you can see other Miis bowling. And they aren't Miis on my machine, so it's possible they're Miis from online, including one that was clearly the president. like, it's a really good Mii of the president.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And president. What I'm not sure is if that's actual games or that's just, you know, visual fluffery.
Oh, it's probably just visual fluffery. I mean, they would do that. Nintendo does that when you do have several different Miis on your system, because all my family at home and like my brother and sister and their husbands and wives and everything, they've all made Miis on my machine.
Right.
So usually those people populate We Party You and We Fit You and that stuff.
All the U's.
Yeah.
So, but one thing that they did do that's not visual fluffery is behind each lane, there's this big, it's supposed to be like an LCD monitor that's like a camera pointed back at where the bowler is. So you can see their face and you can see the people standing behind them. And if you flail the Wii remote around like a jackass, your character jumps up and down and flails about.
Oh, nice.
Which is not super distracting when you're bowling, but if the first time I noticed you was there, I'm like, the fuck is going on with this me? And then I realized I could replicate the process myself. So that was actually kind of fun. Like I said, the bowling feels good. Tennis, not entirely sure about. But, you know, I'm enjoying it. So it's I'm not sure that I'm ready to drop $10 on it when it's ready.
Right.
When my time runs out. But I'm going to at least consider it versus before where I was like, yeah, there's no way in hell I'm paying $10.
Right. I plan to start a trial for one of the games first and then wait until it's,
So the trial is starts and it's both of them.
Oh, really? So you can't start bowling and then,
now I got
24 hours for tennis, you know?
So there's a clock on the top menu screen that's counting down.
Ah, the bastards.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's counting down in your face too. I mean, it's right there.
Okay.
You thought you could cheat the system.
I did.
You can't. How much was it for, I'm sure how much it was for unlimited access for like a day.
It's $2.
Yeah. So it wouldn't take you very long. Well, no, because it gives you all the games, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. $2 becomes way more valuable when there's more games.
Yeah, and I read the Iwata asks for this game, and I think that they said that the free trial would come back every time that a new game would be available
that's
for
cool.
purchase.
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're trying to sell the new game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll look forward to that when they've got something else coming out. Like I said, bowling I played the most, but it wasn't my favorite game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure I want to pay $10 for baseball. And I doubt they're going to put Wii Sports Resort Basketball in there, which is the best game. So,
well, they might. Like they seem to be going in order of how easy it is to port and also to improve. So tennis and bowling are the two games that needed the less work. And for something like golf, they know that there's it's probably the most demanded one outside of those two, but they're trying to implement the thing that they've showed before the Wii U came out, which was, placing the gamepad on the ground and seeing your ball there.
It's a totally unnecessary feature.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're trying to implement that. So, you know, it's going to take a little bit more time. And then there's boxing and God knows that needs a lot of work. So,
God knows that's unsalvageable.
Yeah. So we'll see.
You know, it's a really interesting sort of pricing model with this whole day, the day renting essentially.
Yeah.
You know, cause I mean, they know which way their bread is buttered. This is basically a party game and people are going to look at it like, oh, you know, I've got some people coming over. Let's rent bowling for a night.
Right.
And so, I mean, I'm very interested to see the sales figures on that when we eventually see them.
Yeah, if we ever see them. I mean,
if
completely online, and so it's all up to Nintendo to tell you.
We'll probably get some indication when they release a financial statement at some point, but I doubt they're like, we sold 1 billion copies of this game. What are you going to do, call them out on it? Because they haven't sold that many Wiis?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they could totally just lie to us and hide it in the financials. So,
right.
I will be curious to see if this pricing model gets extended to anything else, though.
That's probably the better barometer for success if we see them use it for something else.
Right. Although there's no clear immediate analog for what else it would apply to.
A Mario Party, for example.
Yeah, but would you really want to pay to rent Mario Party games? Because they're not that substantial.
No.
That's true. Yeah.
But who knows? Like, so far, they've only promised the original Wii Sports games. So if we see that they're offering the Wii Sports Resort games in a similar deal, then we'll see.
Right. If they start adding things like the kayak, we know they've gone too far.
Sure. Well, you know, you buy a Zelda, you rent a dungeon for a day.
Well, the kayak is actually in Wii Sports. Wii Fit You now.
It is. Yeah. That's... If they bring it back Frisbee Dog, then we know things have gone too far.
I love that game.
Oh. And we're joined by Dr. Metz, who has returned from the abyss of no internet.
Yeah, hi, everyone. That was really scary, and I'm afraid it might happen again. So we'll see how far I get in the show.
Here there be monsters, and those monsters be internet outages.
Mm.
It was, you know, it's weird. It felt very much like how I used to feel as a kid about power outages. You know, it's like all of a sudden, oh man, now I can't do any of the fun things that I wanted to do that use electricity. And it's now like electricity and internet are like synonymous now, you know, for entertainment or just productivity, even when you're at home.
Oh, you just have to worry about being eaten by a guru.
You see, when we would get power outages, I would just go grab my Game Boy, but then I would have to play Game Boy by flashlight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
so. Where did you get the third hand to hold the flashlight?
No, you balance it on like a chair, and then you just hold the Game Boy at an angle so it catches the light.
So you didn't have any younger siblings, is what you're telling us.
Look, I had Pokemon to catch, James.
Look, hold the flashlight, or you're gonna get beaten.
No, I was the youngest sibling.
There you go. So, we're going to go ahead and move on to Guy, who has another Wii-titled game that is a Wii U version of a game that was on Wii.
It just so happens that Nintendo is offering new versions of all their old Wii titles all
no,
at
no,
the same
no.
time.
New versions of all the second versions of their Wii-titled games.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Kind of.
That's a little bit confusing, but anyway, I'm playing Wii Fit U.
That was the goal.
I'm playing Wii Fit U. I figured that, well, I don't know, James, do you even have a balance board?
I do not.
I figured that Johnny wouldn't have, yeah, like yours has actually been lost.
No, it wasn't lost. I mean, I gave it to my parents, and they really enjoyed it. And at the time, I wasn't using it at all anymore.
Right.
And so they really actually enjoyed it and got a lot of fun out of it. But now I'm kind of thinking, should I go like buy a secondhand balance board somewhere?
You can get a secondhand balance board for nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure.
I mean, it's not quite reached the level of plastic guitars, but the balance board economy has crashed.
Yeah. Anyway, so Wii Fit U, it feels like it's not the way that it was presented, but it does feel like the third HD remake that Nintendo is offering us this year. After Wind Waker HD and Wii Sports, it's just, you know, another HDified version of something that we're very, very familiar with.
So, I mean, Wii Sports adds a little bit of new content. Wind Waker, obviously, is Wind Waker. What does Wii Fit U, which is a weird sentence in and of itself, add besides HDification?
You're getting fit in HD.
Exactly. Okay, so in terms of exercises, it doesn't add a lot. I haven't really toyed around with the yoga and the strength exercises all that much, but I can tell that it's mostly the same things that they've always contained. One thing that is new is a dance section. So, you know, all the kind of ineffective cardio workout that they used to have in the previous versions that were really, you know, kind of lame. You had to run in place on a balance board. They've kind of replaced that with dance routines. And so you've got like I don't know what a normal dance is, but anyway, like some sort of normal dance. It's not what it's called, but it's like basic dance. There's salsa, which, when, you know, you're kind of decked out in very, like, Spanish folkloric costumes, I don't know, and the girlfriend saw my me and said, hey, look, it's Gay Guillaume.
Well,
anyway.
Attention all Spaniards. He's from Canada.
Well,
don't,
you know, I'm
us.
Sure that Spanish people don't dress like that every day, right? And I'm sure that, you know.
Have you been to Spain, Guillaume?
I admit I have not.
I have, and they do not dress like that every day. At least not in Barcelona.
Right. There is, you know, there's a couple of dance routines like that. The only one that I feel kind of comfortable with is the very, very sterilized hip-hop routine where my me is dressed up like Justin Bieber with a backwards cap, and
because Justin Bieber's so hip-hop. Yeah.
No, but you know, like the way he dresses, I guess, with the basketball jersey and whatever, like it's very,
I mean, he raps, I mean, you know, he thinks he's hip-hop.
Yeah, right. So that's the environment that you're doing this hip-hop
routine.
This
is becoming
in.
Increasingly anathema to me as you talk.
But it's actually a good you know, cardio exercise. I kind of like it, actually, and there's a chance that I might keep doing it, but, you know, like, we'll see. I have a whole month to figure that out.
Well, I mean, it works on two levels. On the first level, you're working out. On the second level, your heart's beating really fast because you're humiliated.
So. Exactly. Oh, well, no, the salsa one was really... That, yeah, my girlfriend was looking at me while I was doing that, and I just couldn't get the moves down, and yeah, it was...
How does it register moves on the balance board? Because all it knows is that you shifted your weight.
Actually, mostly what you're doing is like bopping up and down to the beat of the music, right? Like, well, at least in the hip-hop one, right? But they also, like, for the dance routines, you need two Wii Remote Pluses. So,
you're holding both remotes?
Oh, God, yep. It's Samba de Amigo.
Holy shit.
Yeah, well, kind of. Yeah.
I think even Samba, though, didn't Samba use the nunchuck?
Did that... Right. I think it did, but it used the regular Wii remotes because the Plus wasn't out yet.
Right. So in this case, yeah, you need two Wii Remote Motion Plus.
Holy whatever shit. They're called. This is way more interesting now that I know this.
This is way weirder.
It's not that interesting though, because all it registers really is kind of like the pressure on the balance board and when you shake the Wii remotes. I haven't tested it because I find it hard to find plain Wii remotes now in my apartment, but I think they might do the trick anyway. Like the Motion Plus is not that doesn't really track your movements all that well.
And that was the case even in Nintendo Land, where there's certain games that you could actually play with a regular Wii controller.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is really weird.
You'll probably be very thankful that the Wii remotes are not tracking your every movement when you're dancing, because otherwise it would be very depressing.
I think that would be really cool, like a more granular Samba de Amigo, where it actually had like an avatar of you on screen that followed, your actual movements rather than just kind of high, medium, low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it could be really funny if you do it right.
Right.
I don't understand this world anymore. I just want to remind everybody here that there was an office of people in Kyoto trying to figure out what a Spanish me would look like.
That doesn't surprise me.
And they're Gambarian people, too, right? Like, this game was co-developed by Gambarian, who brought
true.
Us the remarkable Pandora's Tower.
That's true. So they probably weren't in... Probably were not in Kyoto, which is disappointing.
So, yeah. And, of course, there's a couple of new mini games, like balance games, that use... Some of them use the gamepad, but maybe, like I don't know, 3 or 4 games at most. And there's a lot of returning games, and there's a lot of games that don't use the gamepad, but that are new and that now use Wii Remote Pluses or things like that. It's a... I don't know. Like the selection of games is probably the best that it's ever been in Wii Sports, in Wii Fit. Jesus Christ. Yeah, in Wii Fit, but
this is a hard episode, Guillaume.
Yeah, it's so confusing. But
so
mostly
many non-words in titles of games.
Yeah.
Somebody reused non-words.
So really, the new stuff is not so much the activities I find, but the different options that you have for, that the Wii U can bring, for instance, the internet. And, so you can join communities this time. And, I haven't had time to play with that all that much, but you can join like these pre-made communities that have names like, I don't know, like focused on cardio. I that's probably not the name.
Can
something
you create
catchier
your
than
custom
that.
One, like for only family members, for instance?
Yeah, actually you can. Or you can join a Nintendo World Reports community, which Andrew Brown has started. And so you can compete with us, I guess.
What about multiple? Can you be...
No, actually, once you're inside a community, you can't join multiple communities at once. Mm. If you join one and then you try to join another, you're going to leave the other one.
So I must choose between my friends and my family.
kind of.
Or you must unite them.
Or you convince your family to join the Nintendo World Report community.
That's a good idea.
I don't think there being a Nintendo World Report Samba dancing community
Look,
is a good
right
idea.
Right now, it's all males in our community.
We're shocked.
So.
I'm shocked, really. You're implying that the majority of the NWR staff is male. I'm
Stop. Yeah, so, well, it's not just the staff. It's been publicized. There's been an article. So there's listeners to the podcast, and there's people who...
Again!
Yeah.
It's an article in the Sunday Times.
Anyway, I'm just saying, Johnny, if you want to convince your sister or whoever to join, that would be great. A little bit more diversity in there.
I mean, I wish they had Wii U's. That, you know, that's kind of the problem. Like, this, if the system was so ubiquitous as Wii, then I could actually have a pretty wide selection of people I know who don't normally play video games who might actually be willing to do that. I think it would be really cool to do that, but Wii U being what it is, you know, and this being, of course, exclusive to that new platform, it's not going to have much appeal to those people.
Right.
They'd have to buy a $300 system to play Wii Fit again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just not a system seller is the problem.
Right. Yeah.
Not like, I mean, the original Wii Fit was definitely a system seller for a lot of people, but I just don't see that happening again.
Right.
No. And I just don't know what the appeal will be. And the fact they really aren't marketing it either, kind of.
No. Well, right now it's a trial period, right? I don't know. Like maybe, like the release is kind of limited. You can only buy the Fit Meter in certain places.
And you can only download the game. I mean, I really do think this is kind of like them doing almost like a large scale beta test with their most hardcore fans.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably, you know, waiting to see how the community stuff turns out, and I don't know. But yeah, like the community stuff is pretty limited. There's no real leaderboard to speak of, but you can click on different Miis, and you can see their training history, and then you see their high score in a mini game, and then you can to beat that, you know.
That's okay. It's kind of a half step.
So tonight I had the satisfaction of seeing that in most games that both Neil and I played, I was leading. So take that, Neil.
So that's what a leaderboard's all about. It's just you would rather not be so one-on-one. You know, you'd have a whole stack of all your friends. It has a way to like matrix that.
Right. Mm-hmm. You can also see, you know, like it shows the latest people who reached their goal, you know, their weight goal. You can see little things like that and like Miiverse posts, but it's very basic. And unfortunately, these stats, these leaderboards don't carry back into your leaderboards on your local Wii U. When I'm training and at the end of a mini game, I've broken my record. I still see only my own records on the top 10 in there. You know, I don't see Neil's scores or anything like that. So I kind of wish that it did integrate this stuff.
Maybe you're just that much better than everybody else and it is integrated.
Nah, it's really not. Other than that, there's also some neat stuff that they do with the gamepad camera. If you want, it can be a little bit, I don't know. I don't like looking at myself move in general. I don't. I always, you know, I'm always more awkward than in my head, you know.
Oh, like, man. Put that shit on the box. I don't like looking at myself move.
I don't want to look at
myself move.
Guillaume Veillet, the Tender World Report.
If you wish, you can, you know, set the gamepad on its support and just, you know, like, see yourself do the you know, as you train, and so you can start what they call mirror mode, and so you'll have a split screen on the TV, and on one half of the screen you'll get real time video footage of yourself doing these exercises, and you'll see the Wii Fit stuff on the other half. unfortunately, it's not really super consistent. I don't think that you can do that with every mini game. So that's a little bit annoying. And what is really, really annoying is that they'll ask you every time if you want to start mirror mode before certain exercises. You know, like there's no way that you can just set mirror mode off by default or on by default.
Apply to everything.
Yeah. And so it's just this, you know, when I'm playing previous versions of Wii Fit and this version, I always feel like the people who developed it don't use it. And didn't beta test it, you know, like they.
Yeah.
Maybe they just really like saying yes.
Yeah, I don't know, or you know, choosing if they're left-handed or right-handed.
It's like JRPGs that say, "Are you sure you want to load?" Yeah, I'm fucking sure I want to load. I want to start this game. I already picked the file. Load.
I can't play this game if I don't load. Yeah. So even playing Wii Sports Club. Okay, I got it out that time. Nice. Even playing Wii Sports Club today, like, I had to tell the game I was right-handed two separate instances, despite the fact my Mii is set to be right-handed in the global Mii menu anyway.
Jesus.
And so it already defaults to right-handed. I'm like, well, no, I'm left-handed today. I've changed my mind.
Yes. So I highly encourage people who do have the hardware to play the game to do try the month, the free month while they can. And so everyone will manage to see, you know, if it's for them or not, or if there's a chance that they'll get back into the Wii Fit routine or not.
Guy, can you confirm that the trial version really is just the full game? It doesn't seem like there's chunks of content missing or anything like that.
No, other than the, of course, the Fit Meter stuff that I can't access because I don't have one.
Okay. Right.
I think that, again, like if there are some people listening to this who have never gotten Wii Fit and who are intrigued by it now, you really have to know that it's not really, like, it's not going to replace a gym. It's really not that. It's really more of a motivation tool in my case. Like the first time that they weigh your Mii and then you see just how plump your Mii actually is, it's a good motivation tool to get off the couch. I also like, because I don't know, like I'm getting old, I guess, and I sit all day long at work. And when I sit at night to play video games, I end up like my back is aching. So the yoga stuff is pretty fun.
And it was great for that kind of thing.
Yeah. And this time, you know, like I used to do the Wii Fit routine by myself, but now, you know, the girlfriend is doing it. And so I'm hoping that that's going to be an added motivation to move more. And I'm probably going to end up ordering the Fit Meter because I'm already, you know, I walk everywhere. I bike everywhere. But in my, you know, if it manages to push me to climb more stairs or whatnot, then, you know, there's no harm in that again.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so I'm, you know, and the animations are, there's more of them. They're funnier, you know, like, again, you know, you have to see me, this guy dressed like Justin Bieber, just, you know, being yo, 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 check it out. And, When like the idle animations before you select your Miis, like you'll go through all the different exercises. My Mii was doing the yoga tree pose while my girlfriend's Mii was sleeping in the background. And, of course I had to do the whole weigh your pet thing. So we weighed the cat. And so now we have the cat in the, on my Wii Fit Plaza, I guess. So
now you can attach the Fit Meter to the cat and
I don't think I'm going to do that. No, that's not going to happen. Yeah. But anyway, it's all cute stuff, and I'm hoping I'm going to stick with it for a while.
So yeah, Fit You. Within 6 months, you'll be able to bear to watch yourself move.
Probably not.
I hope so. Well, you know, like the whole camera thing, if I can manage to not throw up when I look at myself doing the hip-hop thing, maybe I'm actually gonna start, you know, getting more graceful in my movements, and that would be nice. I don't know, but I am not holding my breath for that.
That's probably a smart decision.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go ahead and move on to another Wii U game, because we're all about the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
Another Wii U HD remake, which is getting a little weird. Carl has the third of the recently mentioned trifecta.
Sure. So I feel like
theme is broken out tonight.
Yeah.
I feel like I should start by saying, because these Chatty Cathys went on about Wii U Sports and Fit, I am on my third beer, so set your expectations accordingly.
Oh, jeez.
They were already super low, Carl. It's fine.
Fantastic. Look, I'm a man of esteem, as you said, James. So against all better judgment, I picked up a Wii U. And along with it, of course, as is the case with the current bundle, you get Wind Waker HD for free, which is great. It's actually why I bought the system. Wind Waker is my favorite Zelda game, and being able to replay it in HD with some minor enhancements seemed like a great way to break in the system.
Now, Carl, what was the last new Zelda game that you played?
Skyward Sword.
I am surprised you played that.
I did, yeah.
Oh, nice. What did you think of it?
I thought it was middling at best.
I think that's pretty close to the opinion most of the podcast had.
I'm more charitable to it than that, but it is by far my favorite Zelda game.
I still plan on getting back to it someday. I'll beat that game eventually.
I mean, to me, to me, that is, yeah, of the 3D Zeldas, it is my least favorite.
To me, it has a lot of highlights and a lot of lowlights.
Well, yeah. when I look at Skyward Sword, I see a lot of missed opportunities.
Yeah.
I just see a lot of cut corners.
A lot of cut corners and a lot of padding. A lot of really, really noticeable padding. And when I look at Zelda, I mean, look, Wind Waker is fairly notable for a certain kind of padding.
Yeah, but it's very much back-ended, though. Back-loaded.
Yeah. But really, though, the sort of Triforce hunt aside, it's extremely well-paced.
Oh, yeah. That's the shocking thing about the padding. It's what makes the padding stick out so much, because the game is so brisk up until that point. And then all of a sudden, it's like, here, spend 6 hours fighting enemies. Because of which a lot of the Triforce pieces come down to just shitloads of combat.
Yeah.
Well, they come down to shitloads of rupees. It come from shitloads of combat.
Well, that too, even the little mini dungeons and things like that where you have to go and
find
the maps. They used to be the maps in the HD remake. You just find the pieces in a lot of those. A lot of them are just like 15 minutes worth of, you know, beating up on the same enemies that you've been beating up in that real dungeons that are way more interesting. Sure. It's really shameless. It's a lot worse than I'd remember from the first time I played
the game. And the thing is, it's actually lessened since the last time you played the game, because
I know, and it's still horrible. It's still like, oh my God. If it took an hour, like my recollection is, I found all the Triforce pieces in like an hour, maybe 90 minutes. No big deal. Why do people bitch and moan about it so much? But this time it's like, even with all the streamlining, I feel like I still spent like 4 or 5 hours of playing that game just to get all the fucking Triforce pieces. And it's like, this is not fun. Sure. Not compared to the rest of the game.
Now, it's a shame too, because you're coming off of the sort of earth and wind temples, and both those two temples are some of my favorite temples in the Zelda franchise.
The earth one is my favorite, I think.
It's really my
second favorite after Great Bay Temple in Majora, but I do really, really like it with all the light bouncing off the mirrors. It's great.
Mm-hmm. And then using Medley as well as sort of a secondary character that you're going to be controlling. It's fantastic. It's a really, really great dungeon. Tower of the Gods is another great one from Wind Waker. And so you're coming off of that really great high. You're coming out of there. You just restore the Master Sword to its full potency. You're ready to start going. And then you hit this brick wall of pacing where it's like, okay, now you basically kind of have to run around for the next probably two to 3 hours.
At least.
And it's a real shame.
That's if you already know where they are. Like, if this was your first time playing the game, I think it would take a lot longer to find all that stuff.
I think that's probably accurate. I mean, for me, I think I beat this game, the HD remake when I say that, I think I beat it probably in about 6 or 7 sittings.
That's about right.
Yeah, I mean, you can knock out any one of the dungeons in less than an hour.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what I really like about it. When I look at what I want from Zelda, I really just want more of Wind Waker. And I don't mean that from a stylistic or even from a control setting, even though Wind Waker does, in my opinion, have the best controls of any Zelda. What I really want is that nice, brisk pacing. Because, again, in Skyward Sword, you hit, in my opinion, a Triforce Quest level wall almost constantly. Every time you want to go into a dungeon, you're going to go through this whole rigmarole to get the fucking door open.
Right.
God forbid you're doing one of those, the courage tests or whatever, where
the thing is, it's always different. It's not like they're making you, it's not nearly as repetitive as in Wind Waker, where like two of the Triforce pieces are in absolutely identical combat focused arena mini dungeons under the water. It's fucking ridiculous. So, I mean, in Skyward Sword, at least every time they send you on one of these kind of padding areas between the really good stuff, it's at least something you haven't quite done before, but it's never really that fresh, and it's never nearly as much fun as what you're going to be doing once you get in the dungeon that you actually want to get to.
Exactly, because the dungeons in Skyward Sword I thought were great. The one where you get
they're really good.
The dungeon associated with the Gust Bellows, I fucking loved. It was a fantastic dungeon. But unfortunately, those are sort of spread out across all this different padding. And so when I look at a Zelda, what I really want is I want a Zelda that takes me like 20 hours to beat. If you can give me a Zelda that takes 20 hours 15. To beat, 15 or 20, I mean, that's really, that would be fantastic.
Think about this. Compared to almost any other, like, you know, really big, you know, so-called AAA, but like, you know, big epic scope, cinematic, big deal release from any other third party, or even Sony with something like Uncharted, 8 hours is a completely typical length. So even if they cut the new Zelda down to like 15 or 16 hours, it's still twice as long as anything else, but it would be by far the shortest console Zelda game in a long time. Like Link to the Past is maybe, you know, 8 or 10 hours if you know what you're doing, maybe even a little bit less. But, you know, the first time I feel like it probably took me more like 15, but I feel like, you know, ever since Ocarina is like this giant 40-hour thing, and at the time we were so excited about, oh my gosh, it's so big, it's so grand. But like going back to it, it's part of the reason I never really cared about playing it again on 3DS. Cause it's like, that game just takes too long to play through.
It does.
You know, yeah, I've already played through it 2 or 3 times over the past decade. I'm not up for that at this point in my life.
Exactly. I am really
not for a game
just,
I've already played before, especially. But
yeah, I've really exhausted my any enthusiasm for another 40 plus hour Zelda game. I just don't have it in me anymore. And you know, as much as I'm sure when they unveil the videos for the next Wii U Zelda, I'm sure I'll think it looks great. I'm sure I'll probably buy it. I'll probably play it, and I'll probably even like parts of it. But these vast parts in between the dungeons will continue to be a chore.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I don't agree. Know. I mean, look, I remember way, way back in the day. This was back before, you know, I turned over the hosting reins over to Johnny. We had a big discussion on, is console Zelda stagnant? And I don't think
it
is.
And we've had that conversation about 5 times more since then.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I don't think
and that's
it
not
is.
Because we're obsessed with it. It's because our listeners are obsessed with it. And it comes up over and over again in listener mail, in live chat questions, panels, all the time it comes up.
Sure. But here's the thing. I don't think it is, because every single time I play a new Zelda, there is always a new hook that I find interesting, a new dungeon scheme that is compelling, and a new story element that I find, captivating. However, because of the sort of tropes that have become associated with the franchise, and maybe the sort of intrinsic need on Nintendo's part to make this the quote-unquote epic experience on their console, they're trying to basically create a Zelda version of fucking Elder Scrolls every time, and I just don't have the patience for it anymore.
Well, and they also, I mean, they can't really pull off a game that's as long as Elder Scrolls that can actually captivate you for that long. I mean, that takes a certain kind of developer. I think a lot of developers cannot make a 100-hour game. I think that's a very hard thing to do, to pack a game with that much content and to make it addictive enough that you're willing to stick with it for that long. And, you know, I think Bethesda does it amazingly well, but a lot of developers try that and it's a real disaster.
Yeah, well, you can't really fill 100 hours without grinding of some kind. And, you know, like the games, Bethesda's games are always about, you know, grinding to some degree, or honing a skill, or, you know, doing the same thing over and over again. You're going to be lock picking and picking locks. And
Yeah. Well, that's the fun thing about those games, though, is that basically no matter what you do, it sort of accounts towards the leveling up that you need to do. And so it feels like you need to take a break from the game and go do grinding and then come back and pick up where you left off. Mm-hmm. It's just matter what you do, you're always gaining experience.
Right. It's the case with any real dungeon.
It's a very different formula than like a JRPG.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. I mean, if there's any game that's really close to Elder Scrolls, it's Pokemon. You know, that's...
Yeah. I thought about that. Especially the new Pokemon, where you can set the experience share so that all of the Pokemon in your party level up, even if they don't participate at all. So it makes you feel like you're making, like, any individual monster is not really leveling up any faster than it has in the other games, but it feels like a lot more of your monsters are brought along. And because you're not deliberately switching out Pokemon just to get them extra experience in battles, which used to be, I used to obsess over that, and it makes the battles take so long. So now that you don't have to deal with that, the whole game is just paced better and it moves faster. Really
and
nice.
those are games where people pour in 100 hours every time there's a new entry in the series, and it feels much more natural.
Right. I am much happier to spend I'm never probably going to play another game for 100 hours, but, you know, maybe 60 hours, which would still be an extreme amount for me right now. It's much more likely to happen if I feel like the game does respect my time and it is set up so that I'm not wasting all that time on bullshit, but I'm actually playing the game and enjoying it more of that time.
And that's really what it comes down to. I don't think the new Zelda games, respect your time.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily agree that it's any, or that it's that considerably different than what they've been doing historically, but I would say that Skyward Sword's dumb collect all the pre-dungeon collect all the whatever they called them.
Sure.
And in its predecessor, the same sort of deal was a tremendously boring exercise that occasionally forced you to completely restart it over again.
You know, I used to be a defender of the Triforce Quest in the sense that I felt it was, although not, it was probably the worst aspect of the game, I still felt it was kind of a legitimate piece of the adventure that was kind of distinct and had its own kind of character. And I felt like it was, like, it really was a quest, you know, it really felt like something you were on this mission and it kind of added something to the story and the experience of playing through it. The second time in the HD version, I'm actually shifted completely on that. I feel like they probably could just take the entire Triforce quest out and just say, here is the Triforce. Now go, you know, and, you know, don't forget to explore the world for all the fun secret things like pieces of heart.
Sure.
If they had done that, it would actually make this game better. It would make it those, like, you know, even 2 or 3 hours shorter than it is now that I feel would make a big difference. It would take out this part that's really not much fun. It's doing like all this shit that's really not very interesting. It doesn't have very much original content built in to the course of events you have to follow. It really doesn't add anything to the game. I say just cut it out in Wind Waker HD, you know, or whatever. And Wind Waker 4K coming 5 years from now. I really think they should just completely take out that part of the game.
Well, honestly, the way that I look at it is I would love it if they found a way to pepper in the Triforce Quest in sort of smaller bite-sized pieces across the game proper. So that maybe, you know, you find these Triforce pieces in dungeons, for example. And so you sort of, if you pepper it out that way and you still make it a part of the game.
You know what that
so
turns it into, though? It's like Metroid Prime.
A bit, yeah.
Like, but hey, the things that you need to beat the game are scattered all over the place. So when you get to the point where that's really the only thing left to do, it's going to drive you into the far recesses of the very beginning of the game. And that pisses off people like James. So I don't know if that's an ideal solution either.
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't say you just leave a random chest in every dungeon where there's a Triforce piece.
Because you're a terrible game designer.
And of course, but what I'm saying is, you know, you beat these various bosses and at the end there's also a Triforce piece or something.
But I think the Triforce had to be the last thing because it's sort of the final escalation of collecting, you know, like, it's like, Link's just finding Triforce pieces all over the fucking place. What's going on? Like, you think somebody go like, well, that's weird. Like, that dumb fish should be like, you probably shouldn't be finding these everywhere. I'm gonna hold on to these.
Played coy? Schmack, look, what's that?
Look, James, it makes no sense for some school teacher in her cabana house to have an underground dungeon in which you find a Triforce piece. It makes no sense.
But sure it does. There was a dungeon before she built the house. It's fine.
Yes, sure. And if you pull the grapple thing just so, the fire goes out and all of a sudden you can get in there.
How are you ever supposed to know there's a Triforce piece down there? It just doesn't even make sense. I mean, the only way they could possibly convey that as any kind of hint is just to have a, like, random NPC character on some other island looking at it and saying, oh, you know what? I bet there's something really special under that house. Like, the most contrived possible way to indicate to you, the player, that maybe you should go pay more attention to that. Like, they don't even try to build it in organically.
You're absolutely right. But here's the thing, because, you know, ultimately we're sort of picking apart the one part of the game.
Yeah, but I was about to say, can we...
Here's the thing. It is still my favorite Zelda game.
Yeah,
and the reason why...
Like I said, I think it may be mine too now that I've played through it again. So even in spite of all this stuff, and everything that comes before that and even after it is so awesome.
To me, what people always complain about being the worst part of the game, to me, is it's relatively non-issue. For me, the worst part of the game is the absolute wasted opportunity when you... I mean, spoilers, whatever. When you go down into the underground or into the underwater and then you walk to the door and you just can't proceed any further. Like, even if they've just forced you to stay relatively close, just the ability to step beyond the door.
I thought it was a tremendously missed opportunity that you don't exit the castle the same way you enter it in Ocarina. You remember that part?
I don't necessarily know that they needed to get that much of a you know, a recall.
Why not? It's such a love letter to Ocarina otherwise.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a good point, because it is supposed to be the exact same castle, and, you know, who knows how long ago, but, like, even the cliffs that you climbed over don't appear to be there anymore. Like the whole mm-hmm. geography around it looks completely different. So it really kind of stretches the premise that, you know, these take place in the same timeline or the same universe.
Right. Well, maybe, you know, that or maybe
you're in exactly
they
the same location that you tread upon.
I don't know how long it was between them. Maybe it was hundreds of years and Hyrule moved.
No, you're 100% right, but I'm
look,
I'm
after what fucking happened to Hyrule in Ocarina of Time, I'd move that city, are you kidding me?
So all I'm saying is it would have been a nice Easter egg if
See,
you had... If
yeah,
had
yeah, yeah.
To me, just being able to go outside, or being able to do something besides have that momentary set piece of, holy shit.
Sure.
It was such just a cool see, moment the first time you go down there, oh my mm-hmm. god. It, yeah, when I was playing the game, I knew nothing about it. I was one of the first people in the world to play it because I'd imported mm-hmm. the Japanese version on launch day. And so mm-hmm. no one told me this was coming. It wasn't in any right. of the press materials they had out there. And it blew my mind when I went underwater and I saw that world in black and white and frozen mm-hmm. in time. It is such an awesome
frozen,
moment.
Literally frozen in the middle of a battle.
Yeah, right. exactly. It's such so an epic cool. reveal. And the best part for me though is when you go down into the steps and you're in sort of the sort of lower chamber and you look at all the sages from Ocarina are in these sort of stained glass and you yeah. and you realize that they in a small way tell the story of Ocarina by looking at them. It's a real big thrill when you realize that.
Yeah.
It was for me anyway.
Yeah. Me too. All right.
So we'll move on to Johnny. What do you have for us today?
Okay. Well,
it better be a Wii U HD remake.
No, it is a Wii U HD sequel, and it's Rayman Legends, which I've talked about before, but it was a couple months ago before the flood. I'd only gotten to like the second world, I think. And so then when I got my new replacement Wii U, I lost my save file. So it took me a while to play back through the stuff I'd already done and get to move on to anything new worth talking about. But I did effectively beat the game over the past week, and I even got to play some of the stuff in the final world, which I would say is really kind of optional. Like if you haven't done it yet, it's not essential to me. And that's where, the very final level is just 8-bit remixes of all the music levels, which are normally there's one per world. So those are like your reward after you beat the boss of each world is you get to play those music levels that they showed off at E3 last year. And they are really, really fun, but this final world, which I actually spent a couple hours playing stuff I really didn't want to just to open it up because I was really curious to try it out. So it's kind of a big disappointment to me because the 8-bit versions of these songs that they provide don't really sound as good as the originals. Like the originals are remixes too. They're not like, you know, they're not literally licensed music that they just plopped on the soundtrack. They're all remixed right. with all the weird vocal sounds of the Rayman characters. And, they just make them really crazy. Like Eye of the Tiger becomes a kind of salsa jam. Mm. That's really bizarre. Crazy stuff. And they're fun to listen to. And I really like those remixes. And then you turn those 8-bit and they just sound kind of mushy and not very much like the original song. And it just doesn't. They're not right. the best 8-bit remixes I've ever heard, you know, that's a lot of the problem. But then they also remix the levels and they put these weird visual filters over the levels I wasn't expecting. Like one of them, you play the whole music level as if you're looking through a fisheye lens. So it becomes really hard to judge the distances as things move from the edge of the screen to the center and then back to the edge.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's,
that doesn't
and
sound
also
like
they,
it's a great idea for a platformer.
It's not, and they also take out all the checkpoints. So you have to beat the entire thing in one go, and now it's way harder than it was the first time. So it's like, you guys really, I mean, what I loved about the music levels in Rayman Legends, and I really think they're one of the best things about the whole game, and they're certainly one of the most iconic things because it was shown so early in development. But they're really not that hard. They're set up to let you play through the whole thing in one sitting if you really try and concentrate. Because I think because it's a song, I mean, you want to hear it continuously. You don't want to have to like keep repeating this one section of it over and over because that's irritating, especially when it's a known song from pop culture. So, I mean, I think they very smartly set them up so that they're not that hard. They're mostly just joyous. You know, it feels like, it really does feel like a reward after you beat that boss. boss
level. It was very smart that that was one of the featured levels in the original demo.
Yeah, it's a bonus level, frankly. It's kind of like the cloud world in Super Mario Brothers 3. You know,
I was kind of thinking it's almost like the worlds in the Sonic games where you would you rotated the level and just bounced around.
Oh yeah, but way better than that.
Well, yeah, but it's kind of like goofy, kind of not really in the same style of the gameplay entirely, but
yeah, it's a novelty, but it's a really strongly executed, really fun, fresh novelty, and I thought it was a great thing to set it apart from games like Super Mario Brothers, you know, which doesn't have anything nearly that wacky. So, I really love those, but these 8-bit versions, I really don't care for. I mean, one of them has this thing where anytime you jump or you're riding on a vine, kind of grinding down a rail, the screen will go staticky like an old TV set between channels. And so anytime you're airborne and like about to land on a platform that you have to immediately jump back off of, you can't actually see that platform. So again, it's just, they do these things to mess with your timing, but these are timing based levels. There's no other skill to them. You're not actually platforming. You're just pushing buttons on, on a rhythm. And so when they fuck up your ability to perceive the rhythm, that's really cruel, and it's actually not very fun at all. So I'm just like, man, I don't understand what they were thinking with this. This doesn't feel like a reward for getting 400 teensies or whatever they're called. It feels like punishment that I played this game way longer than I should have. I should have quit when I just beat the level before this, which is when they actually show the credits. Like, that's the supposed end of the game. But then they don't even try to hide this further bonus world after that. But then the bonus world sucks. I hate it.
Yeah.
It just seems
I'm
a bit
really
of a
pissed,
best, like,
actually.
Like they just sort of had these grand ideas and they just don't work. And that's, to me, that's sort of the calling card of this franchise sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's uneven for sure. I mean,
they have an idea and you're like, maybe you should.
Legends is higher quality than Origins for sure. And I think it's more consistent. And I think the difficulty ramp is much more natural so that it actually teaches you to play the game really well before it asks you to play really hard levels. And I really respect that. I think they've rebalanced it and improved it quite a bit since the previous game. But then, after you get really accustomed to all that and you feel really good about it, you feel like, man, I definitely like this a lot more than Origins, they send you back and make you play a bunch of Origins. And it's just what the fuck were you thinking? It's these levels are clearly not as good. The objectives that you're trying to do in them are not nearly as much fun. It's full of all these slow ass horizontal shooter levels that were one of the worst things about Rayman Origins.
Oh, those are back too?
Yeah, they bring back a bunch of this. Remember the treasure chest races that are so fucking annoying and make you just want to, tear your hair out? They put some of those in there too. It's like, guys, you picked all my least favorite kinds of levels from Rayman Origins and brought those back.
Oh, it's design structures.
And then make me play those to earn enough of the teensies to open that final world of 8-bit remixes that I'm going to turn out to really not enjoy whatsoever.
Rayman Origins brought to you by Sonic Team.
Man,
see, honestly, Johnny, every time you mention teensies, I just have flashbacks to fucking Bathmadads.
Yeah, I know.
And it just gets me.
You know, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's not like you have to collect you don't have to collect them to progress through the game, do you? Isn't it just to unlock the bonus stuff?
No, it is through the game a little bit, but at least for the bonus stages where you rescue playable characters.
Oh, it's not
for the rest of it. It may just be like you beat this level, now you can play the next one. Now you can play the next one. I don't remember for sure.
Yeah, it's not DK64 bananas then.
No. Yeah. It's not nearly that bad. They're more like stars in Mario. I mean, they're there's only eight or nine of them per level, so they're hidden. Gotcha. But yeah, it's like I was enjoying this game so very much, and then it didn't know when to quit. And it didn't telegraph to me that maybe I should consider quitting. You know, like, this stuff is really optional. You don't need to worry yourself that much about it. If you've had your fun with the game, it's okay to quit now. None of that was conveyed whatsoever. The bonus world, I didn't even know it was a bonus world. I just thought it was kind of the final world. I was like, well, I'm not leaving that hanging. I'm going to keep playing this great game. And then in the process of getting to it, I don't know. I just, it's like an extra 3 hours of running through. There's also these invasion levels that are like on really strict timers, and they also don't have checkpoints, and they just ask you to blast through the level at full speed, like Sonic style almost. And if you make even one single mistake, you're screwed and you have to go all the way back to the beginning. And
that sounds deeply unpleasant.
Yeah, Johnny, if you had stopped when you feel you should have stopped, like, do you feel like that was enough content to justify a $55 price tag, or?
That's tough, you know. I think it's definitely not any shorter than Rayman Origins. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's, you know, clearly obvious that they have put a lot more content into this than Rayman Origins. It's just all the other stuff that it has on top of the previous game is all stuff I don't want to do. So for me, effectively, it is the same length as Rayman Origins, which I thought was a decently long platformer. I mean, there's about 50 original non-remixed levels in this game, in Rayman Legends. And like, that's fewer than a Mario game, but the levels are about twice as long as Mario levels. So I think it's a decent amount, you know.
Sure. So my next Wii U game is either this or Pikmin. So it's a tough choice.
I haven't played both, but Pikmin is good.
I know that. I'll get to both eventually.
I think I would go to... it's tough, man. It depends on what kind of game you like, you know.
I do love Pikmin.
Pikmin, I would say go with Pikmin. I mean, Rayman Legends is a really good 2D platformer, but it's not like the best I've ever played or anything. And
here's the argument I'll give you for Pikmin. Pikmin is a first-party Nintendo game. Its price will not go down conceivably anytime in the near future.
That's a good
point. Rayman Legends price will go down because it's an Ubisoft game, and that's what they do.
And it has been kind of a sales bomb. That's a really good point, James. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah,
there you go.
Good point, James.
But I'm not dogging on Rayman Legends. I think you should play it. I mean, I think, you know, most Wii U owners will be satisfied by the amount of content, the quality of the content in this game, and the way that it uses the Wii system features is really well done. You know, there's a great co-op mode with asymmetric co-op, and the off TV play, works really well. I've used that quite a bit. So I have no issues with this from a standpoint of quality. It's just, I think it actually has too much content. And I think you should avoid playing the origin stuff if you can. I think you should avoid playing the invasion stuff if you can, unless you're like in love with this game, unless you love it so much you couldn't possibly ever play enough of it. Mm-hmm. I'd say just quit when you see the credits. I would have been happier if I had.
Well, I'll certainly be getting to this before I get to Wonderful 101, speaking of incoming discount.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I don't know. Probably not. First party Nintendo game?
That has Wonderful 1999 written all over it.
Yeah, Other M dropped in price pretty quickly. If That's Nintendo true. Doesn't do it, the retailers will.
That's true. Mm-hmm. They'll force the hand. It's a very competitive market.
Wait on Amazon.
Yep.
Fair enough.
All right, so I think that's going to go ahead and do it for new business this week. So stay tuned. We'll bring it back around for listener mail.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
So first up this week on the Review Tilt, LEGO Marvel Super Hero on Wii U by Curtis Bonds. I'm not sure when we're going to hit the bottom of the LEGO-verse. Disney's Marvel LEGO Marvel Super Heroes, featuring Wolverine TM, Thor TM, Captain America TM, and Fantastic Four TM. Turns out the game has more trademarks than good points.
We also have a review for the brand new Wii Sports Club Bowling and Tennis by Don Koopman.
Separate reviews, actually.
Okay. What's Old is New again with Wii Sports Club. Nintendo's attempt to re-monetize the old Wii Vanguard turns out to be solid ports of the old with upgraded visuals and online modes.
We have a blog, Nintendo in Retrograde, by our own James Jones. It's important to understand how the movement of the planets and stars affect your life. If not, you'll find yourself lost and unaware. Nintendo was blissfully unaware that when Mercury began its tri-annual movement opposite to the signs of the zodiac, when the planet controlling communications brought the end of Swapnote, jingoism and flippant disregard for serious social issues crammed in a 300-word writing assignment included.
I'm really proud of this.
I can't wait to read that.
The idea is that I'm going to write these little 300-word essays, and just whatever happens, happens.
And this one has to do with astrology.
It has everything to do with astrology, and nothing at all to do with astrology. It's fantastic.
Makes about as much sense as any other analysis of Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, this week we have a feature called What's Old is New, The GameCube, by Zach Kaplan. Zach was a small child when the GameCube came out, which means he was still a small child when the releases trickled down to a tiny stream.
Come on.
Lucky Zach, he gets to live through the GameCube without the massive droughts those of us who did live with it had to sit through.
I really despise this idea that the GameCube is old.
Hmm. Well, you can despise it all you want, but from Zach, who was 4 when it came out, it seems super old.
Oh my god.
Jesus
now
Christ.
Now I'm old, and I despise that fact even more. Okay, well, that's it for Now Playing. Be sure to check out all of these great original articles and much more over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back, everyone. I'm hosting now. So we are going to do listener mail, and the address, of course, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We have some really exciting emails this week, and Carl is going to read the first one.
All right, this one is very irate, so I'm going to try to give it a good line reading. This is coming from Pete, who says, "What the fuck is up with the Virtual Console? If the Wii U was in every living room and the eShop was crammed full of original software, it would make sense the Virtual Console's a little slim. But here we are, and it's a goddamn desert facing the fucking cold vacuum of space.
Whoa,
in
Jesse.
New software releases. When Reggie offhandedly, and possibly uninformatively, mentioned a GameCube Virtual Console, I figured that by now the major classic would be a given, and I'd be looking at the entire Wii VC collection, along with a few GameCube classics to run on my brand spanking new Nintendo system. Instead, every one of those dollars are landing on PSN and Steam, because Nintendo, rather nickel and dime their already strained loyal online buyer base for games they're not even fucking selling to them. Just why in the hell is Nintendo sitting on free money like this?"
I'm a little confused by his nickel and diming part, but I'm worried if I ask about it, he'll jump through the internet and strangle me.
I want Carl to read every email for the rest of the show. That was perfect. This might be one of my favorite emails we've ever gotten. Just, it is so pissed off.
The
oh
tangible
my God.
Rage is unsettling to me personally.
Love it. I love it. And it's not at us.
Right,
no,
right.
I would almost prefer that, because at least then I feel like I've done something to deserve it. I've just wet myself, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah. Well, here's the actual deal, Pete. Nintendo doesn't give a shit about you, man.
No. That is not true. They give a shit about your wallet.
No, honestly, I'm kind of in the same place as Pete. When I heard that as well, I was really hoping to see some of my favorite GameCube releases end up on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Or at least some of my favorite Super Nintendo releases, or at least some of my favorite GBA releases, mm-hmm. which is a platform that was actually announced for Wii U Virtual Console, and nothing has been mentioned about it since then.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's so fine if they just don't feel the need to mention it.
I feel like since I believe it was probably year 2 of the Wii life cycle, Virtual Console has really it had a tremendous drop in sort of the quality of releases, as well as just the regularity of releases.
Where did you get that impression from, Carl?
Man, there was such a long period where they were dropping like 5 games a week.
Oh, dude. And VC Mondays used to have a fucking segment on this show because it was so rich.
We had a segment for Monday downloads, but it was mostly just me making fun of them.
Some weeks I would buy 3 Virtual Console games that mm-hmm. were released on the same day.
Yeah.
That's the quality and the quantity that they were dumping out there, and we were all in heaven, and there was so little else that we were interested in playing on Wii at the time. That was what kept me going for at least a year.
Sure.
It was huge, and to this day, I have tons of Virtual Console games, and I really love having almost all of them I like. And you know, I have like 50 probably. So, I mean, I'm a big believer in this feature, but yeah, the selection on Wii U is not good. And they're really, it's not amping up at all. It's like, no. You kind of have to wonder, like 3, 4, 6 months after this feature first debuted, mm-hmm. if it's already this slow, what's to make me think that it's going to actually get better than this? If anything, it would have been really good at the beginning and then trickle off. But right. I felt we never got past the trickle. We started there.
Well, mm-hmm. I think it's entirely possible they're having to do more work for these Wii U versions of it than they did on the Wii version.
But, like, isn't this because they're really being inefficient about doing things? Because they really should consider making one emulator and not really testing the game so much. I don't know. Like, there's
that's,
no...
That is an entirely un-Nintendo stance to take on anything.
Yeah, hey, but something's going to change.
But they did it back in the GameCube days. You remember those Zelda compilation discs?
Oh, no, they tested those. They knew they were buggy as shit. They were aware.
Those things were fucked, man.
Yeah. They were aware.
It was so buggy.
Did you guys ever play Majora's Mask on that disc?
Yeah, I tried. Oh,
it's nigh unplayable.
Yeah. No,
yeah,
agree.
It's horrible.
Okay, good point. But NES titles, at this point, I find it really hard to believe that
I would actually be shocked if NES titles aren't like some of the more difficult crap to deal with because they're
really
goofy programming.
Yeah, they did so many weird things with like tile sets and they, you know,
yeah,
adding chips into the carts, which like people remember the Super FX chip, which was in very few Super Nintendo games, but there were similar like coprocessors being put into tons of famous NES games that you like, and you just never hear about them because there's so many that none of them have like a catchy brand name that's like widely recognized. But there's tons of NES games that have custom chips,
and they're very hard to emulate. The programming in the NES games was all over the place.
They were like hacking the system basically to get a lot of those games to work.
Honestly, here's the thing: it's not as if they can't galvanize a community around these VC releases. When Earthbound came out, that was all I fucking saw on Twitter for a solid month.
Yeah.
That's because the 8 Earthbound fans created 400 Twitter accounts just to make their game look more popular.
You know what?
How many interviews with that localizer guy did I read that week? I can't even remember how many. There were so many. And I read every single one of them. They were all interesting because that guy is cool.
Well, here's the thing. It's not as if there is no community interest in this. It's not as if that this is something that people have just largely forgotten about. And so it does seem a little strange that they've pretty much relegated it to a background feature. So, I mean, yeah, look, I remember the glory days of the Wii Virtual Console where we got like ActRaiser, Donkey Kong Country, Gradius, and Ocarina of Time on like the same day. It was ridiculous. It was an embarrassment of riches, and this is just an embarrassment.
Oh, wow. Nicely done.
Yes, but what about GameCube titles? Wouldn't those be easier to emulate since, you know, there was no extra hardware in any of the discs because that's impossible, but also there is a freaking, like, there are GameCube parts in the Wii U, right?
Sort of.
It's like there are remnants of the GameCube hardware in the onboard Wii hardware.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But the way the Wii handled emulating the GameCube was just turning off everything that wasn't GameCube parts.
Yeah, I understand that. But doesn't that
It's not quite true, though, James. I mean, they had chips that were flipping into different modes. And there was a lot of software going on as well, I think, for GameCube mode on Wii. So I don't think it's quite as straightforward as you're talking about.
Okay, but doesn't the presence of these components mean that it would be easier for GameCube games to be emulated?
That certainly seems intuitive to me, yeah. But I think your point about the discs being uniform and not having any special chips put in there is a great point, and that's a really good reason. Like, if they can get the GameCube emulation working, it should work with almost everything, you would think.
Yeah. No, it absolutely should, and there are definitely some sort of lesser-known GameCube games. I would honestly love to take for a spin on the Wii U. Remember that game Cubivore?
Yeah. I was quoted in the magazine ad.
That game Aren't you a big shit, Johnny?
That game is so weird, and I would love to play it in HD.
Cubivore is fucking great. Love it. It's so funny. It's so absurd. It's just wonderful. The music
is
incredible.
I get a feeling that the way that Nintendo is running the Virtual Console releases now, we would not get those niche titles right away.
No, possibly never,
because
you shouldn't expect to get them because they aren't the ones that are going to sell.
Right.
No, but
right.
You know what? I would be happy to pay $10 to get Mario Sunshine on my Wii U because I no longer have a GameCube. So if I wanted to go play that, it's a huge hassle, even though I do still have the disc, but the disc is Japanese, so that's even more of a hassle.
Oh, so boy. Like,
I'll fucking never will play that disc again. So I'm depending on them to release it digitally at some point. I'd be happy to pay $10 to play Mario Sunshine again.
All I'm saying
they'll probably charge $20.
All I'm saying is Cubivore is probably going to be the new Mylon Secret Castle.
I don't know what that means.
No, because Cubivore is playable. Mylon Secret Castle exists to sell magazine subscriptions.
These games are nothing alike.
They're not at all, no.
Okay. Great points, and...
Yeah, I understand the frustration. I think it was... There was no... Yeah, like anyone who thought that the Virtual Console releases on the Wii U would have the same kind of momentum that they did in the early life of the Wii was just kidding themselves. It stood to reason that they would just have the momentum that they had towards the end.
Well, and you know, be that as it may, I would say it still gets releases, unlike the Wii one, which was literally just dead unless Capcom decided to release another arcade game from 1988.
Yeah, I mean, they're starting from scratch, though.
Yeah, and the only reason we're getting releases now is because Nintendo still has crap like baseball. And what was the other one? Tennis? Like
golf or tennis. They're not going to run out of the low-hanging fruit for a while.
Sure.
Right. It just, like, there's no interest at all from third parties, or it seems that way. You know, like Square Enix, you look at their plans for next year, it's all mobile and online.
I'm not that shocked that the Wii U isn't selling, and why would Square
Enix
invest
the even on 3DS, there are games, there are way more games that they could be releasing on that thing.
But Square Enix would rather you buy their new games on 3DS.
Mm-hmm. But they're releasing remakes of old games on iPhones, and so that's their priority. You know,
they're just slow to come around, but they will. I mean, the Square Enix came around big time on Wii Virtual Console. It just took them like 5 years to figure it out.
Yeah,
but they did come around. They put Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI and Secret of Mana on there, and they were there from the start with things like ActRaiser, but the big hitters came way late. And I'm expecting the same thing to happen on 3DS. But I think the 3DS actually, the Virtual Console in that does present a problem for Wii U Virtual Console, because whoever is in charge of doing this stuff, I think it really feels to me like their attention's being split between supporting both of these platforms at the same time. And clearly they require very different processes, very different emulators. And so I feel like, you know, the 3DS, I mean, you can look at it either way you want to. I mean, either the Wii U service is slowing down the 3DS support or vice versa, but I don't think they can really support both full blast at the same time with the current, you know, whatever staff they have set up to do this. I mean, clearly there's just some kind of bottleneck, because the pace and the selection of games they're releasing, no one could be happy with this. No one. No one could think, well, Wii U Virtual Console is going really great. So is 3DS, you know? I mean, obviously there are things, you can cherry pick really great games that have been released on there, but it's like one great game every 3 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look, where's Doshin the Giant, guys?
You're out. Wow. You're a dreamer. That's where it is.
I had that game, the Japanese copy, and boy is it
it's weird.
It's a
boy
big
is it Doshin the Giant.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a GameCube version of Kuru Kuru Kurin?
Yeah, there was.
Yes, it was Japan only. I would love to play it. It's actually polygonal.
Yeah.
I would love for that to come out on Wii U. I would definitely buy that shit.
Yeah, I bought all the niche import titles that came out in the Wii U VC, and I would do so for the Wii U as well, but it's not happening.
Well, we can always dream, right, fellas?
Yeah, for real. Okay, why don't we move on, and Guy, do you want to read the next one?
Sure. Ryan from Anaheim writes, "We are now learning that the swap note was shut down because girls as young as 11 years old were being sexually abused by adult predators who somehow used the service to contact their victims. This is very disturbing to hear. What disturbs me the most is that Nintendo is very much responsible for letting this happen. I'm not stupid. I know that a piece of technology can be abused no matter how carefully designed. Online systems have been used and will continue to be used by predators. In this case, however, Nintendo was not careful in how they designed 3DS and Swapnote. When Nintendo created friend codes, their only concern seemed to be preventing a predator from meeting a child on a Nintendo device. However, They did nothing to prevent their devices from being used as a tool for a predator once contact had already been established. If Nintendo cared at all about online services, they would have created a community where they could police chat rooms, messaging, and other chat protocols. However, they threw together a Mickey Mouse solution and washed their hands off any responsibility. The heavily moderated Miiverse seems to be a step in the right direction. However, Nintendo continues to show a complete lack of awareness by letting third parties, quote-unquote, do whatever they want with online play. Nintendo still hasn't created dedicated online infrastructure, including system-wide voice chat, so there remains great potential for abuse. Maybe I'm overreacting. What do you think?
So I actually have some insight on this as someone who works in the software development industry, which is largely consumer-facing on my end. There's something called the penis rule, in that if there is a situation in which someone can show their penis, they probably will.
Yeah.
And
no. I don't think that rule's accurate. I think they will.
Did you guys learn that in your software, you know, engineering courses?
A modified version of that rule was taught to me during a software engineering course. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's actually something that you have to take into account pretty heavily. And Ryan, I think your heart's in the right place. I think you clearly care about these young girls who are clearly being harassed.
But ultimately, yeah. I mean, this is a horrible situation.
Of course. I think you're saying that it's Nintendo's fault, and it's just not. And because the fact is,
it's not their fault at all.
Yeah.
No.
It's intrinsic in any sort of online community. You can only really do so much as far as installing safeguards without sacrificing the quality of the software. And ultimately, that's what they're trying to do. Now, obviously, they want people to feel safe and secure, not only in using this software, but in letting sort of younger users use the software. And I think they've done their due diligence. I think the fact that, you know, we suffered trench codes for the last however many years it was, is proof of that alone. And I think
the fact that they developed something that is as heavily moderated as the Miiverse.
Exactly.
And that they are bringing that to 3DS, which I think really will kind of replace the functionality of Swap Mate anyway.
I guess, but it lacks the creative, like, messaging system that Swapnote is. I mean,
well, you don't know how they're going to implement it.
Unless they re-implement Swapnote, it's not really going to be the same, now, is it?
Well, no, there's direct messaging built in the Miiverse on
Yeah,
Wii.
But
it pales
in comparison to what you could do with Swapnote creatively.
Well, I think the presentation was just different. I don't think the user interface is all that much different.
Yeah, what it comes down to, Ryan, is that there is a measure of parental responsibility in anything like this, you know.
And the 3DS has built-in parental controls.
Exactly.
As a parent, you can completely disable all internet features on the 3DS.
Exactly.
Which, you know, either that was done and it was circumvented, or the parent just didn't do it. Didn't...
Oh, I guarantee you, a second.
What I've been reading is that the parents did deactivate the internet, but they perhaps didn't use the parental controls. Like, maybe, I don't know. The way it was written, it was so vague. It could have been just like the parent just disabling the wireless on the side. Like,
all we have are translations of these Japanese articles, because the incident supposedly happened in Japan, and you know, I haven't read a whole lot of really hard facts about it, but
right.
It's really kind of beside the point, because, you know, this is, I don't know, it's like saying, you know, if this happened in a Yahoo chat room, then it would be the Yahoo Corporation's fault that right. something like this could happen. It's just, you know, either you set up a very, very strictly moderated community, which, you know, in the case of Miiverse, all you can exchange are drawings and screenshots of video games. You can't send people photos.
Right.
Not really. You know, I mean, you can't do voice chat. So, you know, the thing you're talking about of setting up like an integrated, standardized online infrastructure with system-wide voice chat that would be policed by Nintendo. I mean, that's like East German shit. Like that, you know, or like the NSA. I mean, Nintendo does not have the resources to monitor voice chat across their entire integrated online system. That's never going to happen.
And let's be clear. It's not. Not only is it not practical, it's also not a good user experience.
It's not.
You know,
it's also probably illegal, I'm guessing. I mean,
it depends on how they wrote their TOS. You could totally write the TOS so it's legal. But to me, the biggest thing here is that, the Swapnote lets you take pictures, which obviously Miiverse doesn't let you do. And unless you can resume taking photography, whatever they replace it with is going to be shelled out a little bit, because part of the fun of it was taking pictures of ridiculous stuff and making a swap note for it.
Yeah, but to be clear, the controversy here or the supposed real life case that it's not supposed that it happened. I think it's supposed that this is what directly led to Nintendo doing this.
Right.
But mm-hmm. supposedly this comes from an incident in which not like old men weren't just sending photos of their penises to little girls. They were actually meeting them and having sexual contact with them, which is all kinds of fucked up. But that stuff could happen in, you know, text messaging.
Exactly.
So the idea that Nintendo has enabled this or that they could have prevented it and didn't, I don't think it holds water. I think they've done more than almost any other internet company. And they're still catching shit for it.
The initial contact was actually supposed, like outside of the 3DS.
Right. It would have to be.
Yeah. Like they exchanged their friend's number, friend codes on a message board.
Of course.
So here,
because you have to, which is
the internet is not a new thing, and harassment via the internet is also
well,
not
I mean,
a new thing.
Relatively new compared to like printing presses. Nintendo,
in the context of online gaming, Nintendo is pretty far behind the fucking curve. This has existed via Xbox Live for how many goddamn years?
Oh no, yeah, God! Carl, when I was PC gaming
in the
early
'90s,
I was hearing shit like this.
Usenet, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So this is not anything new, and it is really horrible. But look, the realities of being a parent in the modern age is that mm-hmm. you have to talk to your kids about this shit. I mean, all of us guys are well, maybe not Carl, but the other three of us are of a certain age where we remember McGruff the Crime Dog and stuff like that. Where
I remember
we were
McGruff.
Taught,
come on.
Don't get into a stranger's vehicle. Don't take candy from adults you don't know, except on Halloween when your parents are supervising you.
Well, let your parents see the candy first, too.
Right, also, yeah, and they had to, like, test it and inspect it for you and everything.
Give it to the dog. If the dog dies, you don't get any.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the stuff we grew up with, and I'm not saying any of that is outdated, but now you have to add to that. Don't give people your name or your real name or your location or any details about you to strangers on the internet. But, you know, unless they're, like, literally your friends on Facebook and you know that's your friend.
Well, I mean, really, it's not any different, though. It's the same general rule. It's just apply it in a new environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still the good old stranger danger. It's
absolutely.
Just
and, you know, it sounds like that message did not get across in this case. And who knows what the actual circumstances were. But, you know, I mean, I think you have to rely on parents and their kids being responsible and being precautious. And I just don't think removing a medium like Swapnote is not a good idea. I don't think it's Nintendo's responsibility. I don't think it's something that they should have done. I think it sends a terrible message. It's almost admitting culpability in something that just logically they have none.
Yeah.
So it's a really bizarre overreaction to a situation that obviously makes them cringe. And as a corporation, you would hate for your company to be associated with an event like this, but
sure.
Also, can't you just come back and explain, look, there's no way that we enabled this in any specific way.
Right.
You know, we provided a thing. There's terms of agreement. There's parental controls. There's nothing else we can do. So go back into your cave and find someone else to blame.
Look,
so,
it's honestly as if you found someone in a chat room and exchanged AIM screen names and then later on blaming AIM for the fact.
No. It is exactly like that.
Yeah.
I wrote a little bit about this earlier this week, mostly a bit derisively at the nearsightedness of the response. The only scenario in which you would make this response is one of two things. One, you're just so shocked that you have a momentary lapse of any common sense and just shut it all down! And, like somebody's running around the office screaming, just turn everything off. Turn off all the machines. Or the other one is that you're so completely nearsighted and so totally boneheaded about how the
paranoid.
Internet works. That their intrinsic paranoia just like, everything we thought about having internet was real. Let's go backwards
well,
in time.
But also, James, I think you can give them maybe a little bit more credit. Maybe they figure, well, look, we can take the, you know, ultra safe, ultra conservative approach here because we know that within 2 or 3 months, we're going to add the Miiverse and a lot of this functionality will be added back in a more controlled, moderated environment that doesn't support sending photos to each other and stuff like that.
And then
our story is a lot better. So let's just shut this up, nip it at the bud right now, and we will fix it later.
Look, at the very least, what I hope is the outcome of this getting publicity and the amount of, and being a bit more widespread, is that at least I hope it increases parents paying closer attention to their kids playing
video games. But it won't, because the people who are going to hear the story are the people who already would have.
Yeah, maybe. That's kind of what I think, too. Because who even knows what Swapnote is? Sure. Like, it'll probably hit a couple of, like, local news things. They'll pick it up, like, a week later, you know, someone's kid
the
told
only,
them about
the
it.
The only way this gets on the news, the only way a news agency covers this is through extreme sensationalism, where they basically go ahead and say, "Oh, this is how the rape machine got into your house."
Well, you know, when you see like what the British rags were like, there's some paper that was talking about the 3DS, how like it's gonna screw up your kid for life if you let it view 3D on that thing, and people get splitting headaches from looking at it and everything. Like,
the British media is so out of control, though. Yeah. I mean, even compared to American media, which is already pretty.
If
nuts.
You read one of those tabloids, you are a borderline moron. Even if you read them to laugh at them, you are a moron because the brain damage.
And yet, a lot of people think that's information and think,
again,
I don't know.
Like, because they're bleeding morons.
Sure. But anyway, like, I kind of understand Nintendo's reaction if they were thinking about that, you know.
Well,
like,
no,
about
it's a PR move. It's a preemptive move to make sure that there's no bad publicity aimed at them.
But you know what? It's just, even reacting this way is just going to give the story legs.
Yeah, but they have to do it. I understand why they have to do it, though, because if they
if you ever want to prove that Nintendo hasn't their culture has not changed very much since like 1987, I feel like this moment was it.
Sure, this is the reason we're never going to get a Pokemon MMO. This is the exact reason.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, it's sad that these awful things would happen, but I think it's sad that they're being associated directly with Nintendo, who has really nothing to do with it.
To me, the Pokemon MMO would be infinitely more, I don't want to say reckless, but dangerous than this.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because in that case, you are explicitly putting these people in contact with one another.
Yeah. Dude, have you seen Second Life? In a Pokemon MMO, you could actually like act out virtual online sex with a child.
I don't
want to
see Second Life, Johnny. I don't. Guillaume, please cut out all references to Second Life from this show. If one person Google image searches Second Life, thanks to Johnny, Johnny should go to jail.
All right, let's move on to the next slide.
Yeah, that's a heavy topic, and and you know, we definitely appreciate Ryan's sentiment, and you know, like Carl said, I mean, I think your heart's in the right place. I disagree with you academically
vehemently disagree.
Yeah. But certainly it's horrible, and it's not something I'm very happy about. The whole story is just really a downer. So I did think it was complex and worth discussing for sure, and I'm glad we got to cover it on the show. But we're going to move on to more fun things, more fun things. So James is going to read the next letter.
Nathan in Essex, England writes, "In February 2014 marks the 10th anniversary of the release of Metroid Zero Mission. And so, an entire decade will soon have passed without Nintendo releasing a new side-scrolling Metroid game. However, as Jeremy Parrish highlighted in his US Gamer article, with Metroid, indies do what Nintendo don't, the genre has not been ignored by other developers over time, with a number of similar games having achieved some measure of popularity in the download markets. So, my question for you is this. If and when Nintendo decide to work on a new side-scrolling entry in the series, what lessons should they have learned from games that Metroid has inspired over the past 10 years, as well as possible refinements to game design, considering how these games have been developed, distributed, and promoted?"
Well, are we supposed to out-knowledge Jeremy Parrish on the Metroid games?
Oh,
because
I pale under Jeremy.
I would say the name for that article should lose him a million credit points left.
Yeah, no, but really, I mean, if you're super interested in the topic of, you know, just all the different indies that are out there that bear some resemblance to the Metroid gameplay, you should definitely read Jeremy's article, because we're not going to be able to cover, you know, the full list. And
the guy has probably written over like 200,000 words about Metroid games and Metroid-like right. games, you know, like, it's pretty crazy.
He has that giant, like, web chart, you know, where mm-hmm. he, like, mm-hmm. blinks, like, he draws all these arrows that connect games via game mechanics, or in some cases via setting or via tone or music or something like that. It's just insane, and I love him so much for doing it.
Sure. Yeah. Look, if there's anything that Jeremy knows, it's scarves and Metroid. And
no, that's not true. Also, fedoras.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. He's an expert. So I think this is an interesting question, but ultimately, I don't think Nintendo will go back to making 2D Metroids.
No, ooh. Because if you read I don't think that they're going to learn something from indie developers. Because
no,
they're indie developers, and I'm not saying that, you know, like, I'm not disparaging indies, but it's just that one of the main. He was making many points in that article. One of the major points was that these people can now make these games because they're labors of love, and they sure. don't have necessarily to expect a return on the time, the time mm-hmm. that they invest in it. Also, you know, it's becoming easier and easier for one person to actually make a game by themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's just not the philosophy at Nintendo, right? Mm-mm. So I guess if there is one thing that I would like to see is that perhaps, let's take a detour with like Ubisoft, who have started this kind of initiative where you can release smaller games with them. I think that Child of Light is this 2D RPG that is using the Rayman Origins engine, and it's just made by a very small team. Like, there may be like four or five people, and it's just the idea of the one guy who really wanted to make this game, and he pitched it to, you know, Guillermo or whoever, and, you know, like, his bosses were just like, well, what the hell, why is the budget you're asking for so low? But they still, you know, like, okay, like, do your thing. And so he had this freedom within Ubisoft to make this game, and I think that's fantastic, you know, like, while you have, I don't know, like, 800 people working in the next Assassin's Creed, you can also...
Just 800?
Yeah, you can also, you know, like, you can have this one guy who really had this one project and who can take a break from, you know, making shooters and just make the game that he wanted to make. And I think that's fantastic. And I'm sure...
It is, but I don't really see that happening quite the same way at Nintendo with a 2D Metroid game.
Yeah, but surely there are people at Nintendo who want to make games that they grew up with. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, like, I'm sure that they don't all want to be making levels for Mario games, you know. There's sure. probably a couple of them who have new ideas.
I wonder to myself if we'll ever see a scenario where Nintendo will trust a largely untested Western developer with a large franchise like this again. I mean,
you mean like Next Level?
Yeah, well, they just let Next Level make a Luigi's Mansion game, and it did incredibly well for them.
Well, they've let Next Level make a bunch of games.
Yeah,
but they Punch Out. I mean,
yeah, but that's the thing. They weren't untested though. Like they had.
Have you played the shit they didn't make for Nintendo?
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, they were tested and failed.
The first game that they did for Nintendo, as far as I know, was Mario Strikers, and you know, that's not a like a huge budget game, but it's not like a little 4 or 5 man team,
no,
you know, sure. 2D indie game either. That's a it was a big release.
Here's
for
the thing. Here's the thing, and I know this is gonna get Metroid people up in arms, but a 2D Metroid game is not a big game for Nintendo.
Oh, no, absolutely. Not. That's why I'm actually kind of hopeful.
It's super not important for them.
That's why I'm not ruling it out completely, because although I don't think it'll be like a 4 or 5 man team, it might be like a 20 man team.
Sure.
And, you know, and it might be an eShop exclusive game, but I think it's totally possible, and especially because Nintendo, more than any other developer, any other publisher out there, has continued to maintain development of 2D games as a huge segment of their portfolio. And at some point, this franchise is just going to come up in the queue. You know, they're going through, they're doing a new Yoshi game. They've done Kirby. They've continued to keep Kirby alive on multiple fronts. Sure. But even with the Mario series and everything else, Donkey Kong even has like his own 2D platformer franchise that is ongoing and is like a huge tentpole for Nintendo. So I think Metroid is just, it's inevitable. I do think because Metroid is a more complex game, it's a more niche game than stuff like Donkey Kong and Mario. I do think
game.
It will be a smaller game. I think it'll probably be on 3DS because the development costs will be less, and it might end up being a digital only. But right. I really do have a lot of hope that it will happen eventually.
And I feel like I should say, as someone who isn't a big Metroid fan, if you haven't played it, you really should check out Zero Mission. It's quite spectacular.
It's maybe my favorite Metroid game.
It's really very good.
Yes, it's incredible. So if you miss that, because you're like, it's just a remake of the first one. Oh, no. It is so much more than a remake. There's so much new content, and the stuff that they've made it so much more like Super Metroid. But in some cases, I think it really plays better than either Super or Fusion. Mm-hmm. It's just smoother. The animations are better. The controls are better. It is superb. And
it's one of the most thorough remakes I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like added a story to it, like a real story. Mm-hmm. It's lavish, and it's so much more than just like an HD remake or anything like that. It's it's dramatically different.
It's as if I'm assuming they did. They literally went back and just said, "Let's remake this game from scratch."
Yeah. Absolutely. And they totally did. They didn't cut any corners on Zero Mission. It's one thing I love about it so much. Very replayable as well. But you know, it's easy to say, well, they've had 10 years. If they were going to bring back 2D Metroid, they would have done it by now. And I say, hold on.
Not so.
I think the difference is that the systems, the platforms, the distribution methods, and the development tools have changed. And they are just now getting to the point where it's feasible that they could do like a small scale full-length 2D Metroid game on a budget that is realistic now.
What was the gap between Super Metroid and...
Prime?
It was like seven or eight years.
Yeah. I mean,
it was a long time.
Not a short period of time.
Yeah. Right. So I have not given up hope for this series to be revived.
To me, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they're sitting on it to let this franchise sort of lie fallow for a little bit.
Like Earthbound?
Maybe, yeah.
I think that slide putrid for a little bit. I think that's
was a whole other situation.
That's gone straight up rot.
Here's the thing. If Mother 3 can happen, if Knights 2 can happen, another 2D Metroid could happen.
Well, Knights 2 could happen because Sega's not above whoring out anything they own.
No, it did happen. It happened. I know. That's what I'm saying.
Sega's not above it.
Look, all those games, you're saying, they'll never do another Shenmue. It'll fucking happen.
They already made another
Shenmue. It's every game David Cage ever made.
Oh, shit. The gloves are off from James Jones.
Oh.
Nintendo made, or at least financed, two different Tingle RPGs on the Nintendo DS. Do not fucking tell me there's not enough market for a 2D Metroid.
Yeah, seriously.
But you know what? I would rather play a dozen Tingle RPGs than one 2D Metroid.
Oh, on that note,
one I played is amazing.
Look, if a game about cheerleaders could make it to the U.S. and be one of the greatest games ever,
Sakura Taisen is on the Wii, guys, in America.
Yeah. It could happen.
Well, but that's not Nintendo's doing. That's XSEED's complete disregard for taste and understanding the marketplace in front of them and saying, yeah, we can make a few dollars off this game. And then the rest was going, oh, God.
Hey, it finally paid off for him with The Last Story.
It did. Well, indeed. Do not compare The Last Story to Sakura Taisen.
Okay, guys. So the next email is from Delaney. And Delaney writes, why is the Wii Mini coming to the U.S.? What would the point of that be? I believe that would just confuse the market even more with the Wii going out, the Wii U with its unclear marketing, and now the Wii Mini to confuse even more. Why? Why do they need to bring back their dying console again? Then to just flip off the bundle. Oh, sorry. Then to just flip us off the bundle, it comes with Mario Kart Wii, one of the only games that actually worked online and then cut off the online.
Hmm. Oh, that's so good. I totally missed the point on that until I just now. Oh.
You know, they raise a very good point.
I don't even think it counts as a point. I think it's just like, it just, You know the episode of The Simpsons where they were doing focus testing and Ralph just keeps going to the bad feeling as he cries
at
the desk?
Yeah.
That's basically what this email is doing to me right now.
No, it's unbelievably counterintuitive because you're going to have a grandmother or a mother or, you know, anybody uninformed trying to buy a console for their kid or their whatever and say, oh, I want the new Wii. Well, do you want the Wii Mini or the Wii U? Which one's newer? Well, the Wii Mini is newer. Well, I guess I'll get that one.
I don't think any
you
retail
hit the nail on the head, Carl. I mean, it's just so bungle-headed. I don't know what they could have been thinking. But you know what? I'll make a case for releasing the Wii Mini in America, okay? I'll make the case. This is how you do it right. You wait like 3-4 more years, okay? Because at that point, it's a cool collector's item, and the confusion will long be over, and the people who might actually care about, you know what, I sold my Wii a long time ago or whatever. I never got the Wii U, but I would love to go back and play a couple of those games. Then you can get those people. In other words, you have turned it into the redesigned NES and redesigned Super NES that came out in the late 90s.
No, because the redesigned SNES, the redesigned NES had more features, had like better controllers or had...
They had the bone controller.
It, like, the NES actually didn't break your cartridges and stuff
that.
But this actually only displays in interlaced.
I know, Guy, but 4 years from now, that stuff would matter so much less because no one's playing these online games anyway in, you know, 2016, 2017.
Here's the reason why Mario Kart doesn't work online.
They just want to play Mario Kart. But now is, to me, a different story. And just the confusion over the branding is just, I mean, this is a non-starter.
I mean, the reason Nintendo released this now is they wanted to put out a product on the marketplace that could sell for $99 and will probably sell for less during holiday sales, that they could say, look, we sold console units. It's a completely transparent play to investors. Like, it's a,
just because they're so desperate for cash flow.
They could say, we sold 130,000 console units. I just don't say what the console is.
Look, this has Game Boy Micro written all over it.
It does,
seriously.
But the other reason they did this, if you want to be super cynical, is to say that they're screwing everybody in the U.S. who bought a Wii Mini from Canada because this could be worth a ton of money someday.
That doesn't even enter into the equation.
No.
No CEO would even consider
stuff
like that.
I would totally do that, by the way. It would be fantastic.
It's just Nintendo trying to give people a cheaper Wii, and because, you know, sure, like,
but
you could walk
really
into...
But is it that much cheaper?
It's not really that much cheaper, but it's you know, maybe an argument that they can use to steer people away from buying a used Wii, which they make no money on, right?
And there's plenty of those out now.
I mean, the other option here is that they've just shut down the... They want to keep putting Wiis in the U.S. market, but they've just shut down the production line for the original Wii model.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that at this point, this is the only Wii they're making. Therefore, this is the only one they can sell you.
Okay,
and,
you know, but
I think a lot of the reason that they shut down the original Wii production line is that they couldn't keep reducing the price on it because they'd hit the wall. I mean, that thing had GameCube parts in it, like literally GameCube controller ports and shit like that.
Right.
Yeah. So they needed to turn off those molds because it was no longer price effective for them to put those features in when the vast majority of people who buy a friggin' Wii system in 2013 are never going to use any of that GameCube shit.
Sure. Yeah.
And frankly, they're never going to use any of that online shit because they're probably not very tech savvy. Like, the people who are literally buying this as their first ever Wii or something like that, like, they're not going to be buying virtual console games. You know, they're just happy to have a Wii.
Right. Look, all
so
I'm
it's
saying
not
is
if, that if, crazy of a product. This is just a terrible time to be
buying.
You know, if I could buy, if I could buy my Wii U with fake wood paneling, you know, I would.
To be fair, owning at least one system, maybe two, that has fake wood paneling, I'm all about it. Look, the Intellivision had fake wood paneling and fake gold metal coloring on it. It is a work of art.
It's another sly joke at the Game Boy Micro, which came with all those. For those
it
of you who may not remember,
it had little panel things.
Yeah,
and then
you could buy faceplates for it, essentially. Now, do you know who bought several faceplates for the Game Boy Micro?
Oh, I'm gonna go ahead and say Evan.
No, Mr. John Lindemann.
Oh yeah,
oh, wow.
John would buy faceplates for the Game Boy Micro without owning a Game Boy Micro.
Mm-hmm. He was on. I remember launch day. He bought like 5 of them.
Jesus Christ, John!
Oh my God.
John, if you're listening to this, which you aren't because you don't listen to the show, get your ass back here so I can make fun of you for this. Mm.
Do we actually think that the Wii Mini is that confusing for consumers, though? Like, how confused are consumers by the, like, iPhone 5S and 5C?
But at least this one looks different.
And you know what? That's another good point. It looks considerably different than the Wii U.
But here's the thing,
and maybe
guys,
that's actually better for brand recognition.
The people who are going to buy a Wii Mini are not informed consumers.
Right.
That's ultimately what it comes down to.
Okay, but they would also not have the money, probably, to buy a Wii U at this point. Right? Like, they're looking for a cheap
console.
It may
not be the money. I mean, people buy iPads, and they're like $500, which I don't even understand.
They
have no interest. They don't know what the Wii U is, or they don't care about it, and they just want to play Wii games.
Here's the thing. As a parent, I walk into Best Buy, and I'm like, hey, I want to buy the new Wii.
They're going to give you a Wii U. They're not going to take you in front of a Wii Mini because they know what the fuck you're talking about.
Dude, you don't know what fucking guy's working at Best Buy who doesn't know shit about shit. He might give me a Wii Mini.
They should be trained because they have a lot more future sales potential with Wii U games than they do with future Wii games.
I mean, they would absolutely take you in front of a Wii U. There is no retail outlet that would bring you a Wii Mini. There just isn't because, like Johnny says, they're trained on they want to sell you the new product.
Repeat customers. They want to sell you all the expensive games and accessories that they can.
I really don't think the Wii Mini is a big brand confusion thing. I think it's a less brand confusing situation than if they just continue to produce the current Wii, because it's so visually different. Even its packaging and its marketing is so visually different.
Yeah, it may be an upgrade in that sense.
I think the Wii Mini is the best marketing they could do for the Wii U right now because they're going to break the stupid Wii U just over congruency of their marketing campaign.
I'll tell you, I'd rather just buy two GameCubes duct taped together.
Well, no, because this is smaller than one GameCube, so it's it's two GameCubes duct taped together but chainsawed down into a nice like hamburger style package.
Yeah, but you know what? At least it would do progressive scan.
Oh, that's true. Or at least the originals. Didn't they eventually like take out the...
Yeah, they did. They did.
The
they did.
Higher definition video output ports.
Oh, they did. That is absolutely...
So it's been a while since you could buy a Wii that did component.
Yep.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, they never really made the component cables very easy to get either.
They believe me, those cables were like $60 to buy progressive scan cables from Nintendo. It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
because obviously, to Gim's point, the Wii one was the same port.
Yeah, I mean, the GameCube
one.
But you couldn't use the same component cables. You could only use the same AV cables.
I'm saying the GameCube's progressive port and its non-progressive, I mean, the Wii's progressive port and non-progressive port were the same.
Really?
Yeah, there's only one port in the back of the Wii for video out.
Huh. Okay.
It's a different port than the GameCube N64 port.
I guess I haven't looked at one in a while.
Yeah. GameCube and N64 share a port. Wii does not.
All right. Well, James just came up with a pretty convincing theory. I still think it would have been better to wait a couple years if you could afford to.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think this is the best way to A, satisfy their investors, and B, break the marketing logjam.
Hmm. Okay. Right. If you want to be an apologist.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm trying to give the justification that I bet happened internally.
I just think you're giving them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm surprised and appalled at you, James.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. God forbid I try to think like Nintendo when we're being asked a question about why they're thinking. God forbid I do the service to our listeners to answer the questions they ask us. You all should be ashamed.
All right, guys. Well, that is going to wrap up listener mail. And again, we really appreciate everyone who wrote in. We had some fantastic questions lately. And the address for you to write in your own question is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, or you can find a link at the website in the show notes. Now, we have something important to talk about, Carl.
Yes.
And that would be the telethon, which you are taking charge of in my place this year.
Yes, indeed. November 23rd at 12 noon Eastern Time, you can come on over to NintendoWorldReport.com for the fourth annual NintendoWorldReport.com Child's Play Charity Telethon. Try to say that five times fast. Now, we have a lot of great content planned for you guys. I'm really very, very excited about it. We've actually been planning some content up until very, very recently. There's been some last-minute developments I think you guys are...
Oh, really, it's ongoing.
Yeah, you guys are really going to enjoy it. And by the time this is out, you can actually go to NWR and actually read the blog post that will detail exactly what we're planning.
Are you sure it's a good idea to post it this early?
No, I think it's fine. I think it's fine, James.
Yeah, we usually do.
Yeah. Now you can go ahead and check out the show schedule with what's coming up. Personally, I'm very much looking forward to the live space Q&A that we'll be doing.
Oh, that's, yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's in the planning right now.
Are you sure
now,
you
want
to post the schedule this early? Yeah.
We'll see what happens, folks. Hey, look, here's the best thing about this telethon. This is what I love the most about it. It is live radio, folks.
Oh, yeah.
And anything can and will happen.
Oh, the poor children.
Yes. It sure did last year, didn't it, Red Velvet?
It did indeed. Oh, hey, look. Here's the thing, folks. That happened. That actually happened. That was a story that was never going to be released ever, and it came out last year.
Oh,
we did it for the kids, you know.
Yeah, to quote Pele, it's for the children. I did
exactly.
It for the children.
So speaking of stretch goals, Carl, why don't we tease a little bit the thing that we have in mind with the other guys?
Sure. So here's the thing, folks. If we go $1,000 over our goal, which is a total of $5,000 US, or maybe we can make it. Maybe we can make it $4,999 US.
That joke's not dated.
We are going to actually do a live version of Crosstalk.com's Box Office Poison, the podcast all about movies and movie things. And we are going to do a live version of Movie of the Month where we will talk about Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
Bam!
Yeah.
Galaxies collide.
Exactly. And honestly, folks, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to take in your call. We're going to swap stories. Maybe some of you saw that in the theaters. And I would love to hear your stories about that.
And we're going to watch it beforehand. So, I mean, we'll be talking about this movie in depth, okay? This is not just my rusty old memories.
On November 23rd, His Majesty Dennis Hopper will return from the dead.
But only if our listeners and the readers of NWR and everyone else we can rope in through social media and just word of mouth, along with the help of a lot of our fans, only if we can raise a lot of money for a very good charity. So that's the whole point here. And we hope that we can motivate you to donate as much as you can. I know it's a tough time of year with, Thanksgiving coming right up after that and Christmas and everything, but please donate. Please plan to donate as much as you can. And we would really appreciate that. And we're going to put on the best show that we possibly can for you.
Absolutely. So that's 12 noon Eastern time on Saturday, November 23rd. We're giving away prizes. All of your favorite folks from Radio Free Nintendo, Connectivity, Radio Trivia, the Famicast, they're
all
going to
be. And the ones you don't like.
Well, them too. But... but all of your favorites will be there on display for your listening pleasure.
And you can call in and talk to a lot.
Exactly. This is really the time of year where we have probably the most listener involvement in a compressed amount of time. This
and
is the time
when
your voice can only be heard, not only by us in the form of listener mail, but actually on the show.
I will be surly to you in person if you make a donation.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's just like that all the time.
Did you ever want to get dressed down by this insightful wit?
I once called, and now I am on this podcast. So.
That is not guaranteed.
Rockstar.
That is not right a guaranteed there. Outcome of calling into the show.
It could happen to you too, folks.
That's right. Do not make promises we cannot keep.
Look, it's like Kevin Garnett says, anything is possible.
Kevin Garnett also bit a dude.
He did. He did.
I don't understand those references.
I feel like this plug has gotten way off the rails. So why don't we finish with
a preview for the show then?
Why don't we finish off with one more quick plug for what you do, Carl, outside of the telethon and being a guest on our show?
Absolutely. That's of course crosstalk.com, where all the finer things are displayed.
What finer things are those?
Did you write that down?
No, I did not.
Oh, no. Because the paper would have caught fire once the words were on the page.
Oh, man. No, we've got shows like the aforementioned Box Office Poison, the podcast all about movies and movie things. We've got a new episode of Rough Draft, the beer appreciation show coming out very soon, actually, that Johnny's going to be on. This was a show we recorded way back when we were in Boulder, and it's finally seeing the light of day. And
memories.
If you ever wanted to hear Johnny very, very drunk, You can hear this, listeners. This is on tape.
But most of them have heard it before, to be fair. But...
say, wait a minute.
But if you want to hear a segment in which Johnny tells drunken stories, or at least hears them from other folks, you right. can hear that on Rough Draft.
It's amazing. God. And we drink some really good beers and some really mm-hmm. bad beers, and we talk about them.
Exactly. It's a whole lot of fun. There's also Johnny's podcast, Discover Music Project, which should maybe be having some new episodes soon.
I think there will be a new episode coming out pretty soon with our friend Andy Gergen from Connectivity.
And I've been inspired by recent events, and I'm going to be sending Johnny a playlist for Lou Reed.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah. Let's so, folks, that's crosstalk.com, spelled crosstawk.com, where all the finer things are displayed.
Yeah, please check it out. Really digging hard on that new catchphrase of yours.
Yeah, let's just agree that slogan will never be uttered again.
Oh, I think it's become the new tagline. Look for it.
Yeah, I don't think you can control him once he leaves this show, James.
Mm-mm. Oh. Mm-mm.
All right. Well, that is all the plugs. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Thank you to our wonderful, effusive guest host, Mr. Carl Castaneda.
Oh, thank you.
It was so wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
We're probably going to have another guest next week. It's going to be a little while before John can come back on the regular, we think. But stay tuned for details on that. We will continue to have a good-ass time, and we will continue to talk about Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. See, and badass time.
And Nintendo things.
Yeah. No. No.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Oh, I should have kept posting.